Good morning, glory, hallelujah to you, and welcome to Backtracks Aerosmith Revisited. My name is Corey Morissette, joined, as always, by Steven Tyler screaming in my ear. No, we're also joined by Uncle Salty, John Mariano. How are you doing, John?
You know, I thought I was doing a Mighty Mighty Boss Tones podcast, the way that intro came in awfully quiet.
Well, a little low-key. You know, we just had New Year's, a little hungover still. A little hungover from the Van Halen live show.
I hate when I can tell people didn't wear plaid in the 90s when you don't pick up on the awfully quiet reference from a Mighty Mighty Boss Tones joke.
I barely know the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones. But you know who does? I guarantee it, because he knows everything there is to know about music. It's our co-host, Scott Haskins. Scott, how you doing?
I'm doing great, but I can prove I don't know everything about music. Somebody sent me a picture today of an instrument, and I thought it was one thing, and I was completely wrong. So I wow. I know some things, and then the things I don't know yet.
Was it a flugelhorn?
I thought it was a flugelhorn, which it's funny that you say that, because I thought it was, but it's some other weird version of it that has a completely different name. And I thought, well, I'm going to have to research that now because I want that knowledge.
Was it a French horn? A trumpet, perhaps?
No, it wasn't anything that standard. It was, I can tell you, I'll look it up on my gizmo here. It is a, where is it? Euphorium, a euphornium.
Sounds like it'd be fun to play.
It sounds very like a drug trip, but yeah, it is very similar to a flugelhorn.
My 11-year-old daughter has informed me that next year when she's in band, she wants to play the tuba. And I'm trying to talk her out of that because the deposit on a tuba is very expensive.
You just rent one for a couple of days and have her carry it around, and that will then she'll go back to the flute.
Yeah, her backup is a French horn. So like I could probably spring for a French horn. I'm trying to get her into drums because I got a drum set downstairs. Like, you know, go ahead and, you know, play drums.
Yeah, because then all she has to do is buy a pad for the first couple years of band. Yeah.
There's only one instrument I give a shit about whether or not Scott knows about, though.
Which is?
Do you know what a boss tone is?
A boss tone? I've heard of it, but I couldn't tell you what it is.
I hear they're mighty.
Mighty? Is it Bruce Springsteen's voice?
So you've never heard of the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones?
No, I don't think so.
Wow. I feel,
well, the name rings a bell, but what it is or what they are, I couldn't tell you.
They are a ska group from the 90s. Dickie Barrett is the band leader for Jimmy Kimmel, or was it Jimmy Kimmel? He was one of those band leaders for one of those talk shows. But Dickie Barrett was a band leader for a long time. And before that, he was the lead singer to the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones, a 90s ska group.
Real Big Fish was better.
I'll say this. If you are playing a 90s version of Trivial Pursuit, you do not want me as a teammate. I ignored the 90s almost completely. I did a whole podcast on not knowing anything about the grunge scene. So that's my proof.
Fair enough.
You hurt my heart in 9 different ways just now.
I'll staple it together throughout the show.
I just want to point out the scumbag move that Corey pulled earlier. Is like,
which one?
He propped up one band by shitting on another, and like I hate that move. It's like Real Big Fish can be really good, Mighty Mighty Boss Tones can be really good, independent of each other, and whether or not you like the Boss Tones or not, or irrelevant if a band is, by your opinion, better or worse.
Very much a Zach Morris move.
I'm done. I can't do this anymore. I just wanted to point out that I knew the band Real Big Fish. I just watched Basketball. And Real Big Fish are in Basketball.
That's right. They are. Great movie, by the way.
There are much better ways to do that.
There's much better ways to do everything, John. Fuck, I can't win with you ever. You're even wearing a shirt I gave you for Christmas, you stupid son of a bitch. You've been rubbing your vagina all evening here on this Zoom call.
I love this shirt. I wear this shirt around my house. Sometimes with nothing else on but this shirt.
Just when you thought it was an audio-only podcast, it comes with unforgettable visuals.
That's it. We're starting a YouTube page now, and we're going to put this video on there because John is currently stroking his vagina as we're talking about it.
Right. I just want to point out to all the stalkers out there, should you show up at my home and think that you're going to sit on any surface, keep in mind I normally don't wear pants.
You know, we were just talking about
steam it first.
We were talking about what to do for our 50th episode, because that's coming up in 1, 2, 3, 4, like 5 shows from now, 5 or 6. And one of the ideas I had was, you know, a pantsless episode, but that's every episode for John.
That's true. That's not special enough at one of the households anyway.
Exactly. We got to be thinking about that, because today is a show 45. We just did Kings and Queens from Classics Live 1. So that goes over to the live side of the mixtape. 45. We got 5 to go. What do you guys think we should do for the 50th?
I think we should pick a really, like, I don't think we should roll the dice. I think we should pick a very special song to cover that night. We can debate what song, but I think that's, I don't think we should risk the dice on our 50th.
I like that idea. John, what do you think?
I feel like the dice are the fourth person in the booth. And what we're doing right now is saying, you know what? As much as we celebrate our show, we're going to sideline our fourth person just for the sake of picking the proper song.
Now, see, I look at it as you've worked so hard. You've given us so much through the first 49 episodes. We're going to let you take this week off.
Oh, so I can take this week off too?
you take every week off. Yet. Yeah. Once you can tell me what you contribute, John, we'll let you know if you can take the week off.
Well, he doesn't contribute pants.
Ah, good point. He does have an awfully nice vagina, though. I'm looking at it on the Zoom call here, and it's phenomenal.
I've never seen one as impressive.
I think we take the episode, and maybe if we're going to do things that we don't normally do, right? And like we don't normally not roll the dice. We usually roll the dice. So if we're going to not roll the dice, then we should do something else we don't normally do to cancel that out. What do you think?
All right. What are you thinking?
Well, we normally don't not do an Aerosmith song. So what we should probably not do is an Aerosmith song.
That's deep.
That leaves a lot of wide open territory.
I was thinking more of a rap song.
I think I know where you're going. Let's leave it at that. We'll leave the people in suspense. I think another thing we should do for our 50th is I shouldn't host it. I think John should take the reins, set up the Zoom call, do all the production, and host the thing. What do you think, John? Can you handle the three of us on a call?
Like many of your ideas, Corey, I feel that one's terrible.
And you can see why I joined the show, you guys. It's the love fest that I come here for. It's not even the music.
I think it's a fantastic idea. And I think, because then you, John, can throw to whoever you want when you're talking about our sponsor. So like I'm going to do right now and throw to you. Tell us about the sponsor of Backtracks Aerosmith Revisited, Mr. Mariano.
You right now?
Yeah, right now. This is the time.
I wasn't prepared for this.
You do this every week now. Come on.
Yeah, but you always throw to me when I'm not ready.
I don't know why you think you can do what I do.
But I don't think I can do what you do. I just don't like what you do.
I'm not fond of it either.
You know who else doesn't like what you do, Corey?
Let me guess.
It's kind of a lie. He actually loves what you do. I think he loves what you do more than I do. But his name is Ken Knapsack. He's the host and creator of Pop Rock and Radio on the Mixcloud app. Download the Mixcloud app today for the big hits, album cuts, and B-sides from the rock and pop world that make up the soundtracks of our lives. Look for live shows and make requests. Sing, dance, and celebrate the music with the Pop Rock and Radio community. Download Mixcloud. Subscribe to Ken. Follow Ken. Follow Pop Rock and Radio and enjoy, because he really is lighting our Saturday nights up with what he's doing over there.
Absolutely. And I know Ken is teasing some stuff he's going to be doing in the new year. I can't wait for it. As we're taping this, of course, it's before the holidays. So by all means, yes, go seek out Ken Knapsack and Pop Rock and Radio, kennapsack.com, where you can find his shows. You can find his book. Why We Love Star Wars, a fantastic book. Speaking of books, Scott Haskin, I believe you've written one or 12. Tell us about that.
I have. My Universal Court series is just about, the second book is just about to come out. And the third and final will come out in the end of January, which I'm very excited about. It is a law of attraction court-based drama and action. It's gotten a couple of compliments as being a good action novel. So it took some turns while writing it. It got a little more conspiracy theory than I had planned. But I'm very proud of it and very happy that it's getting out there and a couple people have read it. Makes me happy.
I can't wait. I'm waiting until all three are available because I hate cliffhangers and having to wait. So I'm kind of holding off. And I know John's waiting for the movie adaptation because he doesn't read. Hopefully you can get those movie rights sold right quick. But before that, maybe we should talk about the Deep Dive Podcast Network and all the great shows we have going on here, Mr. Haskin. If you could, please let the people know all about the great, great programming they could find on the Deep Dive Podcast Network.
Well, Corey, you know I'm always ready to take a deep breath and get into this laundry list of excellent podcasts that we are associated with. You guys have a podcast that you do called Backtracks Theme Music, which is fantastic. And then, Corey, you do a show with our good buddy Mark Kammeyer called And the Podcast Will Rock. We do. I love the live streams that we've done. That was an exhausting one for December, but it was a lot of fun. Then I have my show, Uriah Heep, the Magician's Podcast. And then we have Nate and John at the Deep Purple Podcast. We have Skinnerd Reconsidered, T-Bones Prime Cuts on the Other Side, Sabbath Bloody Podcast, In the Lap of the Pods, Hawk Binge, Maiden A to Z, Diary of the Mad Men, the Ultimate Aussie Podcast, Universally Speaking, the Red Hot Chili Peppers Podcast, Judas Priest Cast, North by South Podcast, So Far, So Pod, So What, The Tom Petty Project, and Kevin also does a show called Seaside Review that you should check out. We have Quinn at And Volume for All, and Sav, Nick, Steve, and Mark at the Rock Roulette Podcast. And who knows who's going to join next?
Awesome. Thank you very much for that. And if you boys are ready, what do you say we talk a little Aerosmith? We got, of course, a lot of songs on the die here tonight. We have Sheila from Done With Mirrors. We have Pink, You See Me Crying, I'm Down. A lot of good stuff on here. John, what are you hoping to hear?
So I'm really looking at the dice here hard. I'm squinting because it's almost like I can't see the songs I want to pick. But I'm squinting really hard right now. But I might want Pink. I'm not sure.
All right. I know I'm hoping for Pink because I want to get it off the dice. We've had it on there forever. I'm hoping tonight's the night. Scott, you probably haven't heard a lot on here. I know you put You See Me Crying and I'm Down on. The last couple of shows, you kind of said you're just kind of hoping for something new. Are you still hoping for something you haven't heard before?
Well, you know, I was kind of feeling a Beatles cover of I'm Down tonight, but I'll try and manifest with you guys. Let's get Pink.
All right. We're all in agreement for Pink. So let's roll the dice and we're going to come up with Sheila from Done With Mirrors. All right, John, you put this one on the dice. I know you were... have you heard Sheila a lot in your time, John?
Yeah, I play Aerosmith on random when I listen to it. So a lot of random songs come up. This is one of the most random ones that does come up. I put it on there because Sheila sounds hot, and you know, I thought we could use a woman's touch, so I was hoping we could get one by listening to Sheila.
Well, I know when. I think Done With Mirrors is kind of an underrated album. I know you kind of feel the same, John. Joe Perry has come out and said, and I quote, this is a Joe Perry quote, Done With Mirrors, as far as I'm concerned, is our least inspired record. But I've heard fans really like it, so I'm not going to stand there and tell them, no, it sucks. We had to do that record to get to the next one, so it served its purpose. I just don't think it's up to the standard of some of our others. Scott, does that make you excited to listen to Sheila here tonight?
Absolutely. And you know, sometimes there's a big difference in the perception between the band and the fans. A lot of times somebody might write a song that they just kind of thought was a throwaway song and it turns out to be a really big hit. I mean, Smoke on the Water was supposed to be just an album track. In fact, it wasn't even going to be included on the Machine Head album for Deep Purple. And it wasn't until somebody at the record company or a DJ, I think, heard it and cut it up and put it on the radio and boom, it was a hit. So I think it's good that he doesn't want to infringe on the feelings of the fans and just say, hey, if I don't feel that great about it, but if you like it, that's wonderful. Because that's what music is. You know, it's really up to the listener.
And this was a single off of Done With Mirrors way back in 1985. So this is not eligible for our mixtape as we have it right now, but it would be eligible for the all-time Aerosmith Top 10, which we are compiling right now. So a lot of great tracks on there right now. So Sheila's got its work cut out for him, but it was released November 1985 as a single. The B-side was Gypsy Boots, and it hit number 20, I believe, on the Billboard's mainstream rock tracks. So remember this, in Aero history, the band had imploded during Rock and a Hard Place. This was everybody coming back together, trying to do it clean and sober. This record, produced by Ted Templeman, who produced a lot of Van Halen stuff, didn't exactly light the world on fire like they were hoping to, but it led to Permanent Vacation, which kind of did. And of course, in between was the Run DMC Walk This Way cover. So even though John says it's not a cover. That's kind of the history behind Done With Mirrors and where the band was at this time. What do you say, boys? Should we get into a little Sheila from Done With Mirrors?
Let's check it out.
All right, Scott looks very happy. Whenever you start with a, like a swishy hi-hat intro, it makes drummers happy, doesn't it?
It does. And the hi-hats sound really good. They're nice and crisp, but they're not, you know, piercing my ear in any way. It's a good groove. I like that. I like the way the guitar comes in. It's a nice progression. And the sound is really clean.
Yeah, and Ted Templeman, he mic'd Alex Van Halen for a number of years, right? So he knows how to produce drum sounds, let's put it that way. John, what were your thoughts on the intro to Sheila?
I don't know, all this technical stuff about hi-hats, low hats, fancy hats, and top hats. But I can tell you, I enjoy the cymbal there that they're clanging together. And I like the shimmer it makes when they do that. I don't know all the technical stuff. That's why we have Scott on the show, people.
That's right.
But it really is, you know, like you said, it was clean and sober. But I think clean being the operative word there, in that the sound is very clean. It's very well produced. It sounds great to start.
Yeah, and God bless Ted Templeman, fantastic producer. And I remember. In an interview, he talked about how much fun he had making this record. They had to do it in Berkeley because they didn't want the guys in Aerosmith scoring drugs. So they thought, we have to get him away from LA and get him to Berkeley so they'd stay clean, which I thought was kind of interesting. But wow. he even talked about, he said he didn't think he made Joey's drum sound as good as they could have or Joe's guitar. But so far from what I'm hearing, you get that nice, how did you describe it, John? Those cymbals, they sounded what?
Shimmery.
Shimmery, yes. Very shimmery cymbals. I absolutely agree.
I don't want to stop us too many times, but we have a juxtaposition here of the shimmering drums going, and then you have this whiny guitar going underneath it. And I think that it's not sloppy, but it's also a clean sound, but there's a sloppiness to that whine that juxtaposed against the shimmering, which to me feels like sparkles and glimmer and all things of that nature. And the whine feels very dirty and gritty. And those two pieces together, I think, are pretty special. Scott, is there a technical name for what's going on? And can you make some sense of my mumbo jumbo?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. There is a term for it. It's not coming to me. I'm sure it will at some point. It's like contradictive writing, you know, where you're basically trying to create two moods at the same time. I know there's a better word for it, but I do absolutely agree with what you're saying. And I think it just... really, you know, we're not that deep into the song and already we've got, you know, the drum start, then we've got this wonderful progression, and then we've got this coming in on top of it. The song's off to a great start, but I have to disagree with Ted. I don't know what he's talking about. The drums sound great. Kick is nice and punchy. The snare is not too poppy. It's got a good thick bottom end to it. I think this song sounds great so far.
Okay, I really hate to do this, but this is not the third time we're stopping. Are we even a minute into the song yet, Corey?
Minute three, actually, yeah.
All right, thank God, because I was really concerned we were stopping this way too soon. But, you know, you have this great, you know, counter-programming in the music that I think sounds really great. Is anybody else irritated with the bland repetitiveness of the lyrics?
Absolutely. Yes. I was going to ask, like, who would have thought an Aerosmith song and the least inspired part of it is Steven Tyler?
Well, there's the repetitiveness, but there's also just the what grade was he in when he wrote them? I mean, this is something that I think in elementary school, I probably wrote better lyrics than this.
I'm also concerned with the complete, like, I know we're celebrating the band being clean and sober and everything, but there was a complete lack of energy from this portion of the song. You know, and just that punch and that verve that you get in albums shortly after this is just missing. It's very flat.
Did Steven write the lyrics for this song?
Yes, I believe he did. It is credited with Steven Tyler and Brad Whitford, actually his co-writers. So
I kind of just feel like he just took out a rhyming dictionary and found a couple words he liked and said, okay, how can I make these into lines in a song? Maybe he was having, and I don't want to be too mean, because maybe he was struggling with trying to write sober. Maybe he was feeling a lot of pressure because he didn't have anything to take that edge off. So I want to be fair, but looking at the end product, they released this, it came out as a single. I'm not happy with the fact that we don't really have a story. We just have a, hey, here's a feature. Here's what she's like. Here's another feature, just comparing her to whatever random thing rhymes. It's not making me happy.
It's a good point about writing clean and sober too, Scott. That definitely could play into it. According to Wikipedia, the songwriting credits are credited to all members of Aerosmith, even though on the same article they list the songwriters as being Steven Tyler and Brad Whitford, which I can definitely tell a Brad Whitford influence on it in that, you know, it's very crisp. You mentioned the progression. Musically, it's structured very nicely. Yeah. And you talked about Ted Templeman. I agree with you. To me, it sounds like some of Ted Templeman's, you know, best production work, like For Unlawful album with Van Halen or something like that. Like, it really sounds really clean and crisp and phenomenal. But yeah, then you get into Steven, and just the word uninspired just popped right into my head, like lyrically and even how he's singing it. He just sounds bored.
Yeah.
Are you guys familiar with the world of professional wrestling at all?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
So this to me feels like a very mismatched tag team. Like they used to do that back in the day, is like they would throw two people together. Mm-hmm. Usually you'd have a great hero, and like a Vince McMahon or some kind of villain would show up and be like, you know what? I'm going to throw you in with the most uninspired choice against the toughest tag team in the world. It feels to me like Brad Whitford here is like Stone Cold Steve Austin. Like he's the top of his game, and he shows up and he's kicking everybody's ass. And Vince McMahon comes out and assigns Steven Tyler as Gilbert, which was a parody knockoff of Goldberg that lost every. He came out like the toughest guy in the world, but like scrawny, he was built like a Q-tip and lost every match he fought. And it feels very much like that, where all of the heavy lifting is in the music and none of it's in the lyrics.
I was going to say Triple H and Tommy Dreamer, but yeah, I like where you went with that.
Yeah, I have too much respect for Tommy Dreamer to throw him under a bus like that. I needed to go with something where, and it's not that I don't respect the character of Gilbert, but it's more or less like what he brought to the ring was not what a Tommy Dreamer brought to the ring. So I needed to give somebody I could really throw under the bus.
At least you didn't say Zach Gowen. If you remember, I think his name was Zach Gowen, wasn't he? The guy with the one leg that, yep. Yeah, that they put against Brock Lesnar, which, I mean, that was kind of a low point for the WWE
John, if you're saying Dwayne Gill didn't put in the same effort as Tommy Dreamer, oh my goodness, you're going to get roasted on the internet.
Oh, no, I'm not saying he didn't put in the same effort. It's just, oh God, now you've cornered me, Corey. I am going to get roasted on the internet.
It's roast a rare
me.
Moment,
roast me, it's fair.
You witnessed it here, folks.
Oh my God. So I got down on my knees. Yeah. Hotter than Hades. Heaven, if you please. Yeah.
You know what I just realized is that that rhythm that was going on in the background is sounds like Rocket Queen by Guns N' Roses.
A little bit. Yeah. Especially with the hat work there. Right. Mm-hmm, very much indicative of Rocket Queen. Good call. Would you agree, John?
I absolutely agree. We know Slash and the members of Guns N' Roses were very much inspired by a lot of the stuff from this era of slightly before this era, but of Aerosmith. So it wouldn't surprise me if they were listening to this and it inspired some of their work. You know, some people would say poached or stole. It's not, I don't think it's that. I think it's very much they listen to the album and it's like, you know what, that's a really cool rhythm. And then they put their own, look, Rocket Queen's its own thing. And they put their own spin on it.
Right. I was just going to say the lyrics in this, I guess it would be the bridge. He sounded a little more into it. Stephen did. He sounded a little more excited, but they're very disconnected. You know, I get down on my knees. Yeah. Hotter than Hades. Heaven, if you please. Yeah. What the hell is he talking about?
No idea. I don't know if he does.
Yeah.
Some girls put it to you, make you scream in pain. Is this a dominatrix song we're listening to? Is Sheila a dominatrix?
She might be. I'm not seeing anything else in the lyrics that give me that impression, but it's so abstract. I mean, you know, she's like a hurricane. So that means what? It's who could tell?
Ball and chain could be dominatrix. The next line is some will say they knew you and then forget your name. Yeah, I don't know, John. John sees a lot of dominatrixes. Does this remind you of that?
No, it reminds me of a wet fart.
I like that there was no denial there. Like not even the slight. Are there any that you can't remember their names?
No, they make me remember their names. That's the whole point of going to see them.
See?
Good. Good point.
I just want to say, I fucking hate these lyrics. I fucking hate these vocals, and they're ruining what would be otherwise be probably a top 10 Aerosmith song.
Well, you know, musically, it's great.
Musically, it's great, but there's another angle to this that we haven't talked about. So we talked about the production, right? That Ted did a great job with the production. Where was he on these lyrics? Why didn't he come in and go, guys, this is stupid. You got to write something better than that. This is not going on the album.
And as a producer, that's kind of your job, right? To say, hey, Steven, maybe rethink this. Sheila, real tight. Sheila, that's right. Like, come on.
I hate to say it, but at this stage of the game, Steven Tyler is already one of the greatest lyricists of all time. I think it's very hard for any producer, you know, to have that conversation with this band, regardless of their comeback album or not.
Maybe, but if you're the producer, you have to make those tough decisions. You know, that's what your job is to make the album the best it can be. And I don't know, I have to say I'm disappointed. I feel like he was asleep at the wheel on this one.
No, nobody's saying he didn't have this conversation, but I'm saying even if he did, this band is strong enough at that point to tell him to go fuck himself.
That's true.
It's not like he's not used to prima donna lead singers. He worked with David Lee Roth for six albums before this, right? So
true.
All right, so we get a Brad Whitford solo on there, and to me it sounded just like a Brad Whitford solo would. Very rhythmic from the rhythm guitar player. Scott, what did you think of the solo?
Yeah, I dug it. I thought it fit really well with the music of the song. I think it was very well played. I love his sound, too. They got a great sound for him on this. I don't know what Ted was talking about. The guitars sound great.
Interestingly,
Steven Tyler's voice is just a little bit back from where it normally would be in the mix. He's just a little down on the fader. But other than that, I mean, the mix is just fantastic.
I think the production on this is stellar. And yeah, the band is cooking. It's just a... Steven phoning it in is really kind of the only negative I can kind of put on this. John, what did you think of the solo section?
I'm distracted. I got to be honest with you. Like, I appreciate the solo. I can't get past the lyrics of this song. I can't get past. I'm going to sound like a broken record, right? Like, it's fine, and it's only fine because it's weighed down by nonsense. And it's very hard for me to get past. It's almost like you show up wearing, you know, the nicest outfit in the world, and like, but you're wearing those jeans. You showed up in those jeans, right? And it's like you wear this one accessory or this one thing that just throws the whole game off. And that's what these lyrics and this vocals are to me. Are like, yeah, I enjoy it. I enjoy it for what it is. But I know these lyrics are coming back very soon.
Well, you know. If this cracked the top 20, I'm assuming that they played it live, and thinking about, you know, it's bad enough to record it, but thinking about walking out on stage and performing this and Steven singing these lyrics, at some point he had to realize how bad they were. He had to.
Well, and that brings us to my favorite game. How many times do you think Aerosmith played Sheila live? Let's start with John Mariano. What do you think, John?
72.
Remember, this is Price is Right rules. You got to get closest to the actual number without going over. Scott Haskin, we have 72. What do you think?
As soon as you said my favorite game, the number that popped into my head, and I'm just going to go with it, is 64.
64. Well, you're actually not far off the number, but you're both over. So nobody gets to showcase here today. It's according to setlist.fm, which is not perfect, as I found out on other shows. According to them, 60 times Aerosmith has performed Sheila, all of them in 1986, actually. So they haven't played it since 1986, according to setlist.fm. Are you surprised?
No. That at least makes me realize that they didn't. And it's a shame, because musically, this song would be great on stage. But lyrically, it just kills it.
Could not agree more. I don't mean to stop it, but I was loving the drums, because you had the swishy hi-hats again, and then a nice little roll. I'm like, yeah. Joey sounds great, and the drums are produced perfect. It sounds great. And then Steven started singing. she said she could do it, love she could fulfill. Like, fuck, you just ruined it, Steven.
Well, at least he's singing his drivel with passion, you know. But I agree. There was a couple of really good fills in there, too. And I love those higher register toms that he's hitting. I'm a sucker for melodic drums. I love that on the song. I think the sound is great.
John, how do you think those cymbals sound?
I don't know about the cymbals, but the glimmer bangs that they're hitting are very shimmery.
What's a glimmer bang?
it's a noise that makes the shiny sounds.
Okay, I'm not a drummer, so you got to help me out with glimmer bang. I don't know that one, Scott.
That's a new term for me. I've been playing drums for over 40 years, and I'm going to guess he's referring to the cymbals that he didn't know about.
Okay. if I had to guess, I would say that was Joe. I know him and Brad kind of share a co-lead on this. I think that first guitar solo section was Brad, because it was very technical and very rhythmic, whereas this had a lot more stank. And when I think of stank, I think of Joe Perry. So a lot dirtier solo section, but one I really dug. Scott?
Yeah, this feels like it came from his soul. You know, just like, this is what I'm feeling in this moment, and I've just got to let it out. I like that he wasn't all over the fretboard. He really concentrated it on a small area and just let it out. It was really good.
John, I know you're a drum expert, but maybe tell us about what your thoughts were on that guitar section. Was it shimmering?
I like that the band's got all like wah wah wah, like, right? like the noises that they were making were all
the noises were good, yeah.
Wonky and loose,
and they wonky sounded and loose, like, yeah.
they were gibbery. I really like, if this were a pure instrumental, I would be all over the song, right? I gotta talk about it in that tense of I would be, or I should be, or I could be, and that I am, right? Because I am heartily disappointed with the direction this song took the minute the lyrics and the vocals kicked in, and the less of them that we have, the better.
Here's a hot take that's going to get me punched by Scott Haskin, but if this was an instrumental, I'd like this more than the movie.
Yeah, I don't hate your feeling on that. I think it's got a lot to it. Obviously, you would need some more soloing or something else to replace the vocals, but I don't think it would be bad as an instrumental at all. It's got a great groove to it. The song really moves. I love the variety of parts that we get. Yeah, I don't hate you for that.
I have the idea. I'm going to pitch it right now. I want, because they're doing their residency, if they could get Weird Al Yankovic to show up in a serious manner. I don't want a parody of the song, right? And filling in for the vocals is Weird Al's accordion stylings. I think that would be fantastic.
That could happen.
You convince me. Yeah, I'm on board. That'd be great.
I would listen to that.
Right? Not as a polka, not as anything else. This exact song with the accordion laid over it, I think would be incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you're preaching to the converted. I do a lot of music shows with a bunch of one-man band types who have like an accordion as the main instrument. So I'm a big fan of accordion. I know, Scott, you're an accomplished accordionist. What do you think?
I owned an accordion at one point.
Did you?
Nice. Yeah, I did. I would love to hear that. If I have any way of getting a hold of Weird Al, I'm on it, because I think that'd be great.
Good idea, John. Well done. I love that outro. Joey with the da-da-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-da. Oh, that was fantastic. Man, I'm so conflicted on this song, because musically the band is cooking, but lyrically and vocally this thing stinks to high hell. I have no idea how I'm going to vote. Let's start with John. John, you put this on the die. We rolled here tonight. Sheila, does this belong on the all-time Aerosmith top 10?
If I had a toilet flush sound, you'd be gimmickily putting that in here as we hear it twirl down the bowl on the way out, because as much as I love this music, I hate these vocals.
All right, before I go to Scott, I want to recap what we have currently on the all-time Aerosmith top 10. It's Let the Music Do the Talking, Chip Away the Stone, The Other Side, Janie's Got a Gun, Crazy, Eat the Rich, Mamakin, Shut Up and Dance, Helter Skelter, and Hangman Jury. So Scott Haskin, the question I pose to you is, does Sheila supplant one of these songs currently on the top 10 here tonight?
Well, first I want to know what John was on when he picked this song, and I'll have $20 worth of whatever it was. I'm conflicted too, because I think musically it's excellent. And one thing I will say for Steven Tyler on this one is that he did not make sounds over any of the soloing whatsoever. Sure. He said his shitty lyrics and then left it at that. So that's one point I'll give to him on this one. if I were going to push replacing it on the top 10, I would say probably Janie's Got a Gun, because I'm sorry, Corey, I really hate that song. But I don't think it's better than that. I think it's worse. So I'm gonna say no, it doesn't belong. But I'm very on the edge, because I really hate that song, but I hate this one more.
You need to go back and listen to Janie's Got a Gun. I think that song is better than you remember it.
It's funny you should say that, because I had to go to the store today, and when I got in and I turned on the radio, guess what song was playing?
Sheila. See, it's still popular. Yeah. I don't think it was Sheila. Yeah. No. John, well, what are your thoughts?
On what? I think I've been pretty vocal about my vocals on this on this song.
Do you want to take the other side off and put Sheila on? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying I want to, you know, I almost feel like I want to take Sheila off and add an entirely other side, so we have four sides at some point. But Sheila still wouldn't make that fourth side.
Wow. All right, I'm in agreement. I didn't mind the song. Like, I love the music. I hated the words. I hated Steven's performance on it for the most part. But there's nothing, including Janie's Got a Gun, there's nothing on the top 10 I would take off in favor of Sheila. So Sheila is getting the punt, unfortunately. She's going back to her dominatrix ways on Done With Mirrors, which is still a very underrated album. Everybody, I can't wait to put some more Done With Mirrors on there. My Fist, Your Face has always been an absolute favorite of mine. But John Mariano, you're putting the next song on there.
You know what? I'll just tell you off the air, because I'm so flustered right now by what we just heard. It's like, I'm sorry to be out of it, people, but like, those were really bad lyrics. And those were even worse vocals. And it was really flat. And I will get to adding something onto the mixtape, but this is, I need a moment of peace for my mind and my heart right now to kind of forgive what we just listened to, because it was like taking a Picasso and just dropping a deuce all over it.
I really like that analogy, because yeah, you know, the music kind of was like a Picasso that somebody shit all over. So there you have it, folks. Sheila did not make the Aerosmith top 10. We're all in agreement on that one. We're going to have new songs for you on the die next week. But until then, on behalf of Scott Haskin, maybe let the people know where they can find you online, Scott, and what you got coming up.
Everything can be found at www.scotthaskin.com. Starting January 10th, the Uriah Heep, the Magician's podcast kicks in with two new seasons, which I'm very excited about. And books are and everything else are on the website.
Perfect. Thank you very much for that, Scott. And John, people want to yell at you online, where can they do it?
John Mariano NY on Twitter. By all means, throw me your hot takes, your cold takes, and your first takes. I'll take all your takes.
John loves takes. By all means, throw him his way. You can find me at CD Morissette if you want to yell at me for whatever I say on a podcast. I have enough of them. I do this when I do Backtrack Steam Music with one John Mariano, where we're talking music and movies, having a lot of fun on that show. So please check that out. And of course, in the podcast, Little Rock with Mark Meyer. We just got through another live show in December. We got a big one planned for January. Stay tuned for that one. On behalf of Scott Haskin and John Mariano, my name is Corey Morse. Thank you very much for listening. And as always, let's give the final word to Steven Tyler.